The brutality is coming out in the Lori Vallow trial. Letitia Stout's case is getting close to being completed, and I'm sure Letitia Stout can't wait for this to be over. Although, will she testify? The DA in the Brian Koberger case gets help from the Attorney General of the state of Idaho. Let me give you an example of the old F around and find out. Brian Walsh. We don't let the facts get in the way of a good defense. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Yes, it's the old chili powder defense. Let's talk about it. Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't. Like if you do. Leave me a comment and make sure you hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And let's also remember to support the people that support Crime Talk. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for that background subscription service today. When you do, and I'm telling you, I used this just yesterday, trying to look up some information on somebody, you get a background search while you wait. And it's going to have information as to their financial circumstances, their criminal record. Are they on a public registry? Yes, all those important things that they may not tell you about before they come into your life. Be careful with whom you deal with. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy that you did. All right. Had to take a couple days off. Super busy doing that legal work stuff. Yeah, it sometimes gets in the way of the fun stuff doing Crime Talk. That's just the way it is. All right. Let's go ahead and open the record for April 27th, 2023. And let's begin with the docket, the Lori Vallow case. An animal partially ate Lori Vallow's daughter, and her pelvis was hacked into with a sharp tool before her corpse was burned. That's the way the jury heard it yesterday. An FBI forensic anthropologist by the name of Angie Christensen said one of the 16-year-old's bones had damage consistent with a carnivore scavenging, while her pelvis suffered sharp traumas. Now, remember, the bodies were buried in a shallow grave in Daybell's yard, and they were basically not discovered until almost a year later from being put there. Now, Tylee's body was so badly burned and dismembered that the coroner was only able to determine she died by homicide, which, remember, homicide is by death of another, but was unable to provide the precise cause of death. Now, JJ had been suffocated with a plastic bag taped over his head, and Tylee's remains were sent to a bone specialist for further examination. She took photos of Tylee's pelvis. Those were displayed in court, showing cuts to the how deep they came out of the other side of the bone. Now, remember, that's not uncommon. Anytime remains are discovered outside, even in shallow graves, it's not uncommon for animals to come and, carry away bones. You know what I'm talking about. The anthropologist also said that a sharp tool with a small surface area caused the cuts, but could not determine the exact tool. Jurors had previously heard that Tylee's DNA was found on a pickaxe and shovel in the shed on the property. Now, Ms. Christensen from the FBI told the jury that the teen's bones also suffered thermal damage after her body was burned, causing them to turn from a creamy white color to black and tan. Once again, these photos were shown to the jury, and Tylee's left and right femur were also shown there. Now, the FBI agent observed carnivore activity on the reverse side of one of the thigh bones. Now, the court had also heard from coroner Dr. Garth Warren, who said that he could not determine Tylee's exact cause of death because he received only fragments of her body. The cause of death was by homicide, but he said he could not pinpoint exactly what that was, the exact cause of death. Now, in JJ's case, Dr. Warren determined that the boy had been suffocated. We talked about the bag duct taped around his head when they found his body on the property, therefore Chad Daybell. The brutality of it, right? Let's face it, Lori Vallow, not a good mom. Moms have a duty to protect their children. They're young, failed miserably. Now, remember, yes, we get somewhat numbed to talking about this type of thing. And more than likely, a true crime aficionado is probably not on that jury and are probably shocked. When talking to the people when we were out there, the people that were in the courtroom said that the jury looked absolutely horrified when they started hearing about talk of dead bodies, children, and cult-type behavior. So this will probably be shocking. It's not uncommon for jurors to receive counseling after a horrific trial, something of this nature where it is quite graphic. You can literally suffer PTSD. Fortunately, as a hardened criminal defense attorney, I've never been affected by it. Next on the docket, Letitia Stauch. The prosecutor's case is coming to a close. Now, the prosecution believes that they will close sometime Friday. There's no court today, but it could possibly stretch into Monday. Now, for those who are not familiar with this, new viewers to Crime Talk here, Letitia Stauch is standing trial for the January 2020 death of her 11-year-old stepson, Gannon Stauch. Now, the prosecutors allege that she stabbed the boy in his bedroom and then shot at him three times, striking him once in the head. She then allegedly cleaned up the scene and hid the boy's body before calling 911 to report that he was missing. Now, prosecutors also allege that she put the boy's remains into a suitcase that she took with her across country to the Pensacola, Florida area before tossing the suitcase with young Gannon's body in it over a bridge railing where it was ultimately found by workers in a suitcase. When they discovered the contents back in March of 2020, Letitia Stauch had already been arrested and charged with murder. Now, Letitia Stauch and her defense attorneys have alleged that she suffers from dissociative identity disorder sparked by a traumatic childhood. Prosecutors, however, say, no, she knew exactly what she was doing. And who did the prosecutors call? They called Dr. Jackie Grimmett, who said that first that disorder is quite rare, and she called it very destructive and disabling, and said that people with that particular disorder, it can be very frightening. And she said they don't know what's happening to them, and they feel very strange. The doctor said those living with this disorder can also can't hold down a job or any type of relationship, and they're basically not very productive in society. Now, Grimmett said she doesn't support such a finding, and she testified that she saw none of the impairments matching Stauch's claim about herself. She also said she doubted others would notice if she had the disorder. Jurors also heard testimony that Stauch constantly lied to the child's father and her own family in search of Gannon's remains when he was missing. Now, Dr. Grimmett testified that Stauch's prior defense team actually brought her onto the case to evaluate the defendant's competency to face charges and not to consider insanity or to treat her, basically competency. But that report was made, turned over to the prosecution, and the defendant knows that it can be used against her. And so what does that mean? That's right. That doctor is there testifying against her. Oh, there's some a little poetic justice in there, isn't there? Nonetheless, her testimony clashed with the defense lawyer's theory, and the state called her to the stand. Now, Ms. Grimmett is describing dissociative identity disorder as debilitating and said Stauch did not describe such dysfunction. The defendant claimed to have various personalities and named them according to the doctor. Those alleged personalities were named Taylor, Tisha, Jasmine, and Jasper. The doctor described, and the state questioned the doctor on whether Stauch mentioned personalities by the name of Victoria, Harmony, Christina, Little Lucia, and Maria Sanchez. Now, Ms. Grimmett said she did not hear those names when she spoke with Letitia Stauch. Then the doctors found this behavior inconsistent with the disorder, saying that the defendant selected names based upon things she liked and aspirations she had, but that's not how the disorder works. The alters present themselves to you, the doctor said, describing a typical case. You don't create them and you don't name them, kind of whimsically, the doctor described. Now, Dr. Grimmett said she didn't see the defendant changing personalities, and she suggested that Stauch was trying to feel better about her situation by discussing the different personalities and claiming to talk to vampires. In further detail about the defendant's claims of talking to vampires, Ms. Stauch said that she was introducing them while living in Alaska. And they used to go door to door like Jehovah's Witnesses, the doctor described, according to Ms. Stauch's testimony when she interviewed her. Now, the doctor testified that Stauch had borderline and narcissistic personality disorder traits, such as lacking empathy and not experiencing people's thoughts and feelings. So at least Letitia has that going for her. However, the doctor said these characteristics didn't rise to the level of either diagnosis. Now, it's getting close, and I did not see it personally myself, but I will go back and double check. But I am told that the court began the Curtis advisement. That is the colloquy that the court engages with Ms. Stauch to let her know that she has a right to testify or not to testify. And if she does, she'll be subject to cross-examination just like any other witness, etc. But it's her decision. Ooh, Friday and next week ought to be good. Make sure you tune in. And next on the docket, the district attorney in the Brian Koberger matters asks for help. It's not uncommon in smaller jurisdictions for the district attorney in that smaller jurisdiction to ask for help in complex cases from the attorney general. There's agreements that they have in place, and they have more funding, they have more resources. So the district attorney in the Brian Koberger case basically asked the court to appoint a special assistant attorney general, two of them, in fact, to assist. So the prosecuting attorney, William Thompson Jr., pursuant to the appropriate statute, asked that he appoint or be allowed to appoint Deputy Attorney General Jeff Nye and Deputy Attorney General Ingrid Beatty as special assistant attorneys generals to assist in the prosecution of the case of State versus Koberger. And why did the district attorney seek this assistance? He said, "I seek this assistance in order to utilize the expertise and additional resources of the Office of the Attorney General." As we've seen, Lori Vallow matter and Chad Daybell, it can be a lot for a small jurisdiction, not only to get the resources, time, and basically the money to prosecute such a large case. Smart move by the district attorney, Mr. William Thompson, in this case. Kudos. All right. You've all heard of the circumstances of F around and find out. It's kind of a scale. And if it was up on a wall, it would basically say, the more you F around, the more you're going to find out. Let me give you an example of that. Okay. And this isn't just young kids being dumb, but three teenagers here in Colorado have been charged with murder after allegedly tossing landscaping rocks at several drivers in a little bit of a spree that left one motorist dead. Now, the victim is Alexa Bartell. She's only 20 years old, and she was behind the wheel of her car last Wednesday night while talking to a friend on the phone when she was fatally struck by a heavy rock that smashed through her windshield from an overpass. This took place up in Jefferson County here in just west of the Denver metropolitan area. Bartell's vehicle, after being struck by the car, veered off the road and crashed into a field. Authorities ultimately found her deceased in the field, in the car, but her friend was able to track her down using a phone app because the line just went silent. Now, the sheriff's office said that the rock killed Bartell and not the crash. On Wednesday, the sheriff's office announced that three 18-year-old men, that's right, adults, were arrested and charged over Bartell's death. Look at this trio: Joseph Koenig, Nicholas Mitch Carroll Chick, and Zachary Quatt. They're all suspected of carrying out several similar rock attacks on drivers the same night. Bartell was killed, like we talked about. Now, these attacks started just after 10 p.m., and at least seven vehicles were targeted, and another two drivers suffered minor injuries. All three teen suspects are accused of throwing the rocks during this little adventure, but it's unclear who the driver was. Now, each face charges of first-degree murder, extreme indifference. Extreme indifference is basically doing something so reckless that it's almost certain that somebody could get hurt, and you didn't care. That's right. And guess what? It really doesn't matter who threw the rock, because I'm sure somebody said, well, I didn't throw it, he threw it. Doesn't matter. Complicity is not a charge, but it's a theory of prosecution that you can be held responsible as though you did something yourself if you aid, encourage, assist, or abet somebody after the fact. Tragic case. But, you know, some people say just young kids being young kids. Yes, we all did stupid things as young kids, and thank God, you know, we all didn't wind up in jail or prison. But guess what? That's where these kids are probably going. because they killed somebody. And the general rule is when there's a dead body, somebody's got to go to prison. Remember that, ladies and gentlemen. Next, remember the Brian Walsh case? Well, don't let the facts get in the way of a great defense. So an attorney for Brian Walsh, he's the Massachusetts husband charged with murdering his wife, Anna, on New Year's Day, admitted in court that the Google searches of how to dispose of a body were somewhat problematic for him. But, you know, obviously they still maintain his innocence. Now, Mr. Walsh appeared in court in Boston, Massachusetts, on the charge of first-degree murder. And he looks a little better than he did the last time we saw him, which, you know, they cleaned him up a little bit. They probably told him, hey, you want to stop looking like you're so guilty? Keep looking like you're homeless or something, all right? Anyway, the police say that he killed Anna in their Cohasset home in the early hours of New Year's Day by beating her to death, then later hacking her bones apart with a hatchet and saw. Investigators discovered multiple Google searches of how to dispose of a body, how long does it take before a corpse starts to smell, and how to clean up blood on their son's iPad. Well, it's obvious the son must have been asking those questions, right? Like I said, never let the facts get in the way of a good defense. Now, the evidence was laid out earlier this year, and Walsh's attorney, a lady by the name of Tracy Miner, said they were a little problematic for him before suggesting that Anna had disappeared. Yes, why? Because she was having an affair in Washington, D.C., where she lived and worked during the week. When she vanished, Brian stood to gain allegedly $2.7 million in life insurance payouts and was fearful that his wife was going to leave him. They said that he had hired an investigator to follow Anna in the months before her death, though it's unclear what that investigator actually discovered. Now, Walsh denied those allegations through his attorney, and like I said, the attorney admitted his mother had hired a private investigator but claimed she did so independently. And what did the judge do today at this hearing? Well, denied Walsh's bail and ordered him to return to court and remain in custody. And he'll be back in court back in August for his pretrial conference. But the prosecutors in the bond argument laid out once again why they believe that Mr. Walsh killed his wife, pointing to surveillance footage that showed him buying gallon cylinders, hydrogen peroxide, baking soda, plastic sheets, and weapons at various stores after her death, and Google searches of how to remove the blood and the concrete like we talked about. Like I said, attorney said, hey, we get it, judge. But don't worry about it. It doesn't prove anything. Doesn't prove murder at all. Curiosity, you know, who knows? Maybe you watched Crime Talk and wanted to know these questions. I don't know. Should I Google those and see what the answers come up to be? Maybe that'll help Brian Walsh. I don't know. Well, the attorney also claims another person's DNA was found on the HVAC suit along with Anna's. And on January 1st, after she was last seen alive, the $2.2 million life insurance policy was taken out of Anna's name, listing Brian as the sole beneficiary. So combining with her $400,000 other life insurance policy, Brian Walsh stood to gain $2.7 million if his wife died while they were still married. Well, it doesn't quite work that way if you are the person who did it. It's called the Slayer Statute. We'll have to wait and see. Prosecutors also say that Anna was considering a divorce when she vanished suddenly. We're going to watch this case. I think it's going to trial. I do.
As a pet owner, you want to give your furry friend the very best. That's why Baked in Colorado's CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect choice. These delicious treats not only taste great, but they also provide a wide range of health benefits for your pet. CBD has been shown to have many positive effects on dogs, including reducing anxiety, alleviating pain and inflammation, and improving overall wellness. Baked in Colorado's treats are infused with premium, full-spectrum CBD oil, meaning your pet will benefit from the whole plant extract. Not only that, but Baked in Colorado's treats are made with all-natural human-grade ingredients, so you can feel good about what you're giving your pet. They're also free from wheat, corn, and soy, making them a great option for dogs with food sensitivities. Baked in Colorado's CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect way to support your pet's health and well-being. With various flavors, including peanut butter, pumpkin, and bacon, your dog will love them too. So why wait? Head to www.bakedincolorado.com today and order your dog a bag of these delicious and nutritious treats. Your pet will thank you for it.
Next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. After being caught with a bag of heroin, a suspect told police that his family sent it to him from Guatemala. and he thought it was chili powder. Come on. I mean, that is a great defense, ladies and gentlemen. That's almost as good as, those aren't my pants, right? Remember, everybody always had the, sure, you found drugs in my pants when I was getting searched down going into a bar or something. Those aren't my pants. I just put them on. My roommate, let me borrow them. Next time, try the chili powder defense. Anyway, police allege that Daniel Asenio Barrera was pulled over Thursday evening as he drove into Clearwater, Florida. And Mr. Asenio Barrera was initially arrested for driving with a permanently revoked license. During a subsequent search of his car, they found a large clear bag containing 29.7 grams of mixture, which tested positive for heroin on the field test. After being advised of his Miranda rights, Mr. Asenio Barrera stated that his family sent it to him from Guatemala and that he thought it was chili powder. Yeah, let me know. You think you believe that, ladies and gentlemen? But it is a good defense. I mean, at least he didn't say, yeah, I knew it was heroin, because they have to prove that he knew it was heroin. I guess it's going to depend on exactly where they found it, etc. We'll just have to wait and see. We'll try to follow that one as well. Anyway, Mr. Arsenio Barrera is being held on two felonies and a $55,000 bond. He's also facing some probation violations related to a DUI conviction. All right, thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.